Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Nadeau, joined as always by my co-host, Black Jake Fletcher. We are live and back after a little bit of a week off. We are in 2022. Hope you had a great Christmas and a great New Year. Hopefully you're rested and relaxed and back into the rat race of life. We are back and ready for another great show. Truly been a blessing to deliver this show every week for the last 6 to 8 months. And now we have yet another year. We're going to get after it. We've got a great show today. We're going to talk about Paul Vario. And obviously, Paul Vario is someone that, if you've ever seen Goodfellas, you were well aware of who Paul is. He was known as Paul Cicero. But the truth of the matter is, Paul Vario is frankly one of the most important captains in the history of the American mob. He was very powerful. He was a great earner, and he had a very interesting life. Arrested over 40 times. I got to admit, I've studied a lot of mobsters over the years. I don't know of a mobster that was arrested more than Paul Vario. Let's bring in our co-host and get the show started. Blackjack Fletcher, legal expert, or consigliere. How you doing today, Blackjack? How's everything? I know in Florida, it's got to be a lot better than it is where we are.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. It got a little chilly last night. It dipped down into the high 40s. So I had to put a light sweater on. But yeah, it's been really nice, man. It's nice to get a little bit of a break from the heat, even though, you know, you guys are dealing with God knows what up there.
It's really cold.
I'm excited to be back. I'm excited to start our second year on this show. Yeah. I'm excited to talk about Paul Vario, even though, you know, he is one of those guys that was just played in a movie in Goodfellas by Paul Sorvino so well that anytime you say Paul Vario, I immediately see Paul Sorvino's face.
Yeah, you know, and when you think about Paul Vario, I mean, you just kind of think of him as, you know, the leader of a little gang that, you know, had Jimmy Burke and Henry Hill. But the truth of the matter was, like, Paul Vario had one of the biggest crews in New York. I mean, he was, look, I said before, and I'll say it again, if Paul Vario doesn't get arrested in the late 80s and go to prison and ultimately die, I think once Tony Ducks Corallo was hemmed up in the commission case, I think Paul Vario should have been and would have been next in line to be boss. Yep. He was very trusted. He was the consigliere at one point in the 70s. And I think he would have taken that family a lot further probably than Anthony Casso did. The problem was it didn't matter because Paul Vario got sick and ended up dying, but had a huge crew, had a very interesting life. A lot of people don't know something about Paul Vario that we're going to talk about today. Definitely a tough thing to talk about, but we're going to talk about it. A lot to get into. So let's leave nothing further. Let's get into it. Let's talk about Paul Vario on the sit down. And Blackjack, there is something that relate Paul Vario and me. Do you want to hear what that is? Off the gate, I'm going to tell you right off the gate.
Please.
Paul Vario was born July 10th, 1914. And why that's important, I myself was born on July 10th, 1989. So Paul Vario and I share the same birthday, interestingly enough. Paulie Vario was born in East New York, Brooklyn, and would grow up at 968 Hemlock Street. He had four brothers, and most of them, including his brother Salvatore, would follow him into the life of the mob. And that's something that you see. I did a YouTube video the other day on a smaller gangster, Joe Beck Di Palermo, who was also in the Lucchese family, and all of his brothers followed him into life. It is a norm. We see it time and time again. The oldest brother goes into the life and his brothers follow him in. Interestingly enough, Paul Vario was involved with crime pretty early. And one thing that Paul learned is, you know, how to be a criminal, but he also learned, and this was said in Goodfellas, Jimmy, he loved to steal. I mean, he actually enjoyed it. Paul Vario was the same way. Paul Vario was a master hijacker, a master burglar, a master thief, and he would start early. As a young child, at 11 years old, Paul Vario stopped going to school. He just started running the streets and was hit with truancy. And would actually serve 7 months in juvenile hall because of his behavior. So during the height of Prohibition, he's running the streets, getting into trouble, and learning how to be a criminal quite quickly. By 16, he decided, you know what, I'm done with school. I'm leaving, and I'm going to start getting into stealing shit. I guess he believed that, you know, it's pretty simple to understand. You steal stuff, you sell it for profit. There was no nothing involved where you had to pay anything. And he got addicted. He started stealing stuff, including auto parts and other things. And at 16, he would be charged with burglary after he and a friend were arrested for stealing tires from an auto store. He would also be arrested two other times by the age of 20. So as we know, Blackjack, this is a norm with gangsters, but you know, Paul Varia really shaped his life quickly. He didn't give a shit, and he loved to steal. That was his big thing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, over the course of these shows, Jeff, we've talked about a lot of guys, right? And a lot of different personality types. And some guys, while they're all technically criminals, some guys were more interested in the business side of things. Some guys were more interested in violence. Paul Varia strikes me as a guy who just wanted to do what he wanted to do and didn't really give a shit what laws he broke and was just going to go out there and say, you know what, I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I've seen many, you know, kind of things about Paul Varia. A lot of people would say from his inception as a young criminal, he was a brutish kind of hoodlum, ugly looking guy, vicious.
You talk about ugly. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I say this as a staunch heterosexual. We have had some guys on this show that, you know, good looking men. Paul Varia is not one of them. You Google Paul Varia, don't do it while you're eating dinner.
Yeah, he was definitely an ugly guy. There's a guy in the world we're in. I've heard him refer to him as, he looks like the Charlie the Tuna character from the Starfish Tuna. He kind of does. I mean, he got the goofy glasses and like the whisker mustache, just a brooding, ugly guy.
Yeah, he looks a little like inbred. It's a shame he's not from Staten Island.
Well, we know that. But yeah, look, Paul Varia was an ugly guy. And look, he started getting in some really ugly things as a kid. A lot of people don't know this, but the mob has always looked down upon people that have committed rape. But that has not precluded them from being in any family. One of the individuals that actually would be convicted of rape was Paul Varia. In 1936, he and a friend, Anthony Romano, would pick up a woman called Frances Graziana. She was a 18-year-old woman in Brooklyn. At this rate, Paul was 22. He and this Romano drove Miss Graziana at Howard Beach, Queens, where they parked the car and proceeded to rape her. They then assaulted and beat her. In 1936, just a couple days later, he would be arrested. And in typical mob fashion, Paul Varia believed that if he went and leaned on the family and the victim, she wouldn't testify. In 1937, he would ultimately, though, be convicted, but the trial would be delayed before the conviction after the girl and family were threatened. They went to the police about it, and very brave, went to the police and said, look, we need protection. They gave her protection. She would ultimately testify. Paul's conviction would initially be thrown out, but in the second conviction, he would be found guilty and get 10 to 20 years in state prison. So, you know, Blackjack, we've seen it on mob circles. You deal with a lot of bad people. It's rare, though, you deal with someone that's committed rape. You know, generally, I would have to imagine the mob looks down on sex crimes. But, you know, not only Paul Varia, but there was an individual in the family as well, Lucchese's Christy Ticfunari, who was Anthony Casso's mentor. He was convicted, a gang rapist at one point. So the Lucchese family turned a blind eye. Paul Varia went to prison to serve his time for rape.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not breaking any ground here when I say this, but you know, Jeff, I dealt with criminals for a long time. Even most criminals of all varieties look down on sexual predators. It's a particularly disgusting thing. And, you know, I'm glad he got convicted of it. And let's just say one thing. Let's give this woman and her family a ton of credit, because it's hard enough for women to come forward with rape allegations in 2022. Okay. in the 1930s, I can't imagine how hard it was. And then to be believed and to have him arrested, have your family threatened, and still have the balls to go forward with it, those people deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah, and by this point, I mean, he had a reputation around Canarsie and around Brooklyn as being a hoodlum. So Paul Verrier would go off to prison. He would actually get out, in the mid-40s, the late-40s, and just go right back to the crime family. He would, by the early 50s, be inducted into the Lucchese crime family. Obviously, by this point, they had moved from the Gaglianos to the Lucchese's, and Tommy Lucchese was running things. Paul would be added to the crew of an individual called Salvatore Curiale. Curiale was a very old school Italian mobster, and he ran that crew for the Lucchese family. They called him Don Turi. And in that crew included a close friend of Paul Verrier, an individual, Pete the Killer Avenante. Now, if you've ever seen Goodfellas, there's actually a reference to Mr. Pete the Killer. He actually references to Henry Hill, quote, "I took out that thing for you," when they're introducing the mobsters. He was a real person, and he was actually a very close friend really until the end for Paul Verrier. Other people in that crew would include Paul's brother, Salvatore Babe Verrier. One of the other individuals that would actually mentor Paul, his brother, and Pete the Killer was a guy, Joe Reese Schiavo. Schiavo was an old school guy. He had really come as a Campari many years ago. He's a couple years older than Paul and was kind of one of the original soldiers in that neighborhood, and kind of took... They were kind of the sub crew inside the crew, and they were kind of the younger group. And Joe Schiavo actually kind of ran things and kind of schooled and mentored Paul and his associates coming up. Paul Verrier really just went right back to the streets when he got out of prison. He would get into most mob rackets. He knew a ton about it already. He would run dice games, and he would use the money that he made to open legitimate businesses. And one of the businesses he would own, actually two businesses in one, was, as we know in Goodfellas, he opened a pizzeria and a cab stand, which would ultimately be the breeding ground in Canarsie to where Henry Hill would meet Paul Verrier. So that was a true story. Tutti Verrier, who was Paul's brother, he ran the cab stand and the pizzeria. That was very legitimate. So Paul would Blackjack be inducted. He was a family member, and was really had the world in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, he's a made man at this point. He's got his legal troubles behind him for the moment. And, you know, he's establishing himself within the family. As you said, he's got his guys around him. He's got legitimate businesses through which he can funnel money now, so that when he's earning illegally on the street, he's got a place to put it, and it doesn't raise a lot of eyebrows. He's on his way at this point.
Yeah, and look, ultimately by the late 50s, Paul would move out of the Canarsie section in East New York and head over to Queens and into Long Island. Paul would slowly kind of create this huge crew that was obviously being built from the ground up. Obviously, his family was involved, but he was starting to build a really heavy crew. And by the late 50s, Salvatore Curiale would die, and Paul Verrier would take over the position of capo for the Canarsie crew. In the crew, and again, I can't go over every single individual in this crew, but it was a large group, and a group that, you know, would go on to have long careers in the mob. Obviously, you know, headliners were Jimmy Burke, Henry Hill, Thomas DeSimone, friends of his like Stephen Odo, Stephen DePasquale, and then his brother Salvatore, Peter, Paul, and Leonard, his son, would be involved as well. Other people involved included Little Al Diarco, who would ultimately take over the crew many years later and become the acting boss at one point, Bruno Facciola, Pete the Killer Avenante, and Salvatore Fabo. Also Ray and Peter Argentina, and Domenico Danny Cutia. All these guys were in that crew. It was a gigantic crew, and one that reputation preceded itself. They were really the backbone of the Lucchese crime family. It was that simple. Yeah. Not only did Paul have the taxi cab and pizzeria, but he also owned a floral shop called the Fountain Blue Florist. And according to people that knew much about this place, it was actually one of the big suppliers to mob funerals. If you needed a floral arrangement, which, you know, gangsters have this thing about flowers. They think whoever sends the biggest arrangement cares the most. We all know what film that's from. Mob funerals were big. Flowers are big. And, you know, that's a great business to be in. It's one of those kind of niche businesses, Blackjack, that you don't hear much about gangsters in floral shops, but this is Paul Vario. I mean, he was a smart guy and he had his money literally everywhere. And this was around the time that this crew is getting going, where not only were they in legit businesses, but now hijacking starting to take shape in the early 60s.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing about this crew is he's established kind of a who's who of the time period. I mean, it really is an all-star crew. And to me, the most interesting thing is that he's got two of the most famous non-made men in the history of the American mafia in Jimmy Burke and Henry Hill kind of headlining this crew, and they're not even made men.
Right, exactly. And we all know we did an episode on Jimmy Burke way back. And I mean, Jimmy Burke outside of Meyer Lansky is the most successful earner and mobster that wasn't Italian. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll also talk about an individual that he was connected to, a guy called Milton Weaker. Milton Weaker, if you're talking about bookmakers, Jewish bookmakers in really from the 60s to the 80s, I'm not sure that you can get bigger than Milty Weaker. I mean, he was one of the biggest bookmakers in New York, really outside of Ruby Stein and one or two others. And Paul would go into business with him as well. So, you know, Paul was really, really high level. By the mid 60s, Paul was had his hands in everything. He had hijacking crews that were working out of airports. He had legit businesses, as we talked about. He was in unions. He was in all sorts of things. But as I said, he got connected with Milton Weaker, who was this prolific bookmaker. He was this mathematician based in Long Island. And Milton Weaker had a gigantic operation. It was said that at one point in the mid-60s, Milton Weaker was making $20 to $40 million a year through bookmaking and numbers rackets. Now, Milton would handle the bookmaking side, and Paul and his associate, Stephen DePasquale, would handle the numbers runner business. Now, the numbers racket, as we know, and eventually in the late 60s would go away because the New York lottery would be passed and it would kind of phase out. But yeah, as we've talked about with Tony Salerno and other people, the numbers racket was gigantic, Blackjack. And this policy stuff was, again, the earning level of Paul Vario. He was connected with just about everyone. Interestingly enough, there's kind of an interesting story that in the early 70s, one thing a lot of people don't know about Paul Vario, if we remember Joe Colombo had that goofy Italian Civil Rights League. Remember that?
Yep.
A lot of people don't know, but Paul Vario is actually the membership director, whatever that means. And he would ultimately leave the association due to high-end exposure and everything. But yeah, so he's making a ton of money through his bookmaking and numbers operation. But he would be arrested. And throughout the 70s, Paul Vario would be arrested a lot. And he would ultimately in 1967 be arrested for this numbers racket. And again, arresting Paul Vario was a norm. Like I said, Paul Vario was arrested about 40 times. That's pretty crazy, right?
I mean, we've never encountered someone during the history of this show arrested that many times. It's a staggering number of times to be arrested. And when you sit back and look at the amount of time he actually served, really, I guess he did pretty well for himself based on the odds.
Yeah, I mean, he really didn't do a ton of prison time until late in his life. And this is the continued issue with, like, the gangsters that we talk about. You know, if the justice system in this country was just a bit better, a lot of these people wouldn't have been on the street, quite honestly. It's kind of crazy how they continue to just get away with things. I mean, Tony Ducks Corallo literally got his name for ducking convictions. Like, that was how he did it. Paul's headquarters would be a junkyard that he owned in Queens. And again, not only did he own junkyards, but scrap metal firms as well. And he was involved with multiple nightclubs, including a place called the Golden Dome, Channel 80, the Malibu, and Speaks. So, you know, this guy was in everything. And it was said at one point, Paul Vario Blackjack had, quote, $1 million in a vault inside one of his real estate properties. Just an incredible amount of money. Paul would actually get some really sad news, though. In 1974, his son Leonard would actually die in an arson case. I guess according to news reports, he would be involved with the life. He'd be sent to take care of some business, and I guess something would happen where he burned to death. He was just 23 years old. Sadly, at the funeral, two cameramen were badly assaulted and had a $6,000 camera broken by Paul's men while they were trying to film the funeral, which you have to admit is a bit slimy. Look, I get they have to do what they have to do, but you have to be pretty ballsy to go to a gangster's funeral and film it. And they had to deal with the repercussions.
That's an assignment that I think I'd probably turn down. I understand that it's newsworthy because of who Paul Vario is and that his son was involved, but it is just in such incredibly poor taste to go and film any funeral, let alone the funeral of someone's child. Like that is, and when you factor in that Paul Vario was a hothead to begin with, like you had to know something bad was going to happen there.
Right. And you know, the thing about what made Paul Vario so interesting outside of the fact of all this is that, you know, this is what's so fascinating about capos, right? Because they're the leaders of these soldiers. And remember, I mean, Jimmy Burke was a prolific earner. I mean, yep. These guys were prolific earners, stealing tons of money. We'll get to Lufthansa here in a little bit, but I mean, it's not talked about enough when we talk about Paul Vario. Like he truly was, you know, not a visionary, but just a real powerful guy. And I feel like Goodfellas didn't quite even do him justice. Like that show, I think that film painted him as just like this local crime boss that like ran a couple of people. It's like, no, he had a vast criminal enterprise.
He put together one of the greatest crews of all time. I mean, like, and that's not an overstatement. Like when you look at the guys that were in this crew and the amount of money that they were able to earn for him and the Lucchese family as a whole, I think you could argue they're the most successful crew of all time.
Yeah. It did a lot of great, well, not great things, but a lot in mob circles did a lot of big
things. In terms of earning money, I think you'd be hard pressed to find another crew that earned more money than they did.
Right. No, 100%. I mentioned how Paul was arrested a lot. A couple of instances, he was arrested and got 6 months in prison for bookmaking. He was also pinched for loan sharking twice, drunk driving, civil contempt four times, hijack conspiracy, interstate theft, criminal contempt seven times, income tax evasion twice. He ended up getting time in prison for that. All things from witness tampering to insurance fraud, the defrauding the federal government, to grand larceny, to assault, to burglary.
You know what you just said? Seven counts of criminal contempt. In all likelihood, that means he just didn't show up to court. Like Paul Vario was arrested so many times, he just said, fuck it, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, exactly. In 1978, as we know, there would be an infamous hijack heist that would take place. Jimmy Burke, who was the brains of the operation, would phone Vario and basically give his idea to them. Paul Vario would quickly give the approval, but insisted that Jimmy Burke, who was in prison at the time, supervise it. So they had to wait. They ended up waiting to 1978. And that's when the esteemed members of Paul Vario's crew would steal over $5 million in cash and almost $1 million in jewelry. Now, remember, in 1978, that would be equivalent to about $23.5 million today. That is a vast score. I mean, one of the biggest and best we've probably ever seen at this level.
And not only the dollar amount, right? Like the dollar amount itself is an unreal amount, but the balls to walk into JFK Airport, okay, and pull this thing off in one of the busiest airports in the world is just incredible. Like, you think about something like that trying to go down today, it's impossible. It's utterly impossible to do what they did. Like, it is an incredible feat to go and rip off an airliner sitting at JFK Airport. It's unbelievable what they did.
Yeah, and we all know what happened. I mean, they had people on the inside. Everything kind of worked out perfectly, and it went. And we still talk about it today as far as people that are involved with it or weren't involved with it. Keep in mind, from 1967 to 1973, the family was being run, the Lucchese family was being run by an individual, Carmine Tramonte. Tramonte actually took over when Tommy Lucchese died in 1967, and there was a successor waiting in the wings, Tony Dux Corallo. But as we've talked about in that show, he was in prison. So Tramonte would be assigned the job by Carlo Gambino, who headed the commission. And he had actually named Paul Vario consigliere. Paul served from consigliere from 67 to 73. Ultimately, Tramonte would go to prison and Paul would be ousted as consigliere. But Paul was really powerful. And again, probably was the stone cold leader once Corallo goes away, if not for going to prison, which we're going to talk about in just a second. We all know what happened in 1979 as well. This would be immortalized in Goodfellas. Tommy DeSimone, who was on his way to be made, was killed. I want to give a little background of what exactly happened in that murder. According to people that are very familiar with this case, Tommy DeSimone would last be seen with Paul Vario's brother and an individual called Bruno Facciola. Facciola was part of the Vario crew. He was a hitman. He was an earner, big time gangster. And Facciola actually escorted him to this meeting to be made. A lot of people don't know that. They would also discuss that no one exactly knows who killed DeSimone. Now, I've talked to some of the best historians in mob history. Me and all of them would conclude that Tommy Agro was the killer, a Gambino hitman. But there are a lot of reports that will tell you that John Gotti was actually the shooter. A couple different gangsters said that. It will never truly probably know, but a lot of people do believe that Gotti or Agro were the shooters in that situation. Now, Bruno Facciola, interestingly enough, the individual that took him to that meeting, he'd actually die a few years later. He'd be found with a dead canary stuck in his mouth, indicating Anthony Casso believed that he was an informant. Sadly, a few years later, it'd be reported that he was not an informant. But as we know with Casso, he was a bit of a lunatic. People were being killed around Paul Vario, and things were kind of falling in a little bit. Paul had a scheme in the early 80s where he was involved with this car theft ring. And there were about 20 guys that were stealing cars. And they were taking Cadillacs, nice new sedans and things of that nature. And they would put the cars back into circulation after selling them at mob-run car lots by basically pulling the tags and just messing around with them. It's pretty simple, but it ended up being a huge moneymaker for the mob. And ultimately, Paul Vario would be arrested. He would then get arrested again for extortion of freight companies and unions. And by this point, Henry Hill would become a rat scumbag, and he would implicate that Paul Vario, as well as doing what he was doing with the unions and freight companies, that he falsified paperwork with the parole board to help Henry Hill win early release from prison. I guess from what I've gathered, Paul Vario assigned a job to Henry Hill that didn't exactly exist at this restaurant. It was like this fictitious restaurant. And what is low life Henry Hill do? He actually brings that up and Paul gets jammed up for it. So he gets hit with defrauding the government and then gets hit with this racketeering thing with the extortion. And on February 21st, 1985, while he was in prison for the defrauding the government, he would be hit with that case. He would ultimately be given 10 years in prison for that extortion. So Blackjack, it was just really kind of bad luck for Paul Vario. Obviously, Henry Hill became a stoolie, and that hurt him badly. But, you know, Paul really was on top of the world. He had just had the Lufthansa heist. He was making tons of money. He was probably, in my opinion, in line to do something at a high level with the family. But Henry Hill started singing, and that was the end for Paul.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there was no way he was going to overcome that, right? I mean, Henry Hill just spilled the beans on everything he had. I mean, the guy, we talk about Sammy Gravano a lot, and everyone who listens to this show knows how I feel about Sammy Gravano. Henry Hill is right there with him. I mean, Henry Hill, as much of a scumbag of a person as you'll find in his life, you know, reaped all the benefits of this life he led. And then when it came time, you know, to deal with the consequences, he just ratted on everyone for everything he could come up with, and then went on to live the life of a total degenerate afterwards. Paul Vario's no hero by any stretch. And we've talked about guys on this show, Jeff, that I would openly say that I admire. Paul Vario's not one of them, but Henry Hill did him pretty fucking dirty.
Yeah. And, you know, I always felt like, you know, Goodfellas is a great movie. I think that one of the great scenes is at the end when they zoom in on not only Jimmy Burke, but Vario. And you just see the incredible blank stare that he gives to Hill. Hill had pretty much grown up in front of Vario. Like, it's that simple. And, you know, just kind of see him just completely go against, and that's what, when you think about informants, like, it makes you kind of sick that they're gonna, you know, basically just take all the money and be that person, and then just kind of flip and totally give it all up. It's just kind of crazy. But ultimately, Paul Vario would die in 1988 in federal prison in Fort Worth, Texas. He had gotten lung cancer by this point, would pass away. Would you agree that he would have to have been the next in line to take over the family?
Yes, I think that he is probably the most likely successor at that point. You know, he was exceptionally successful at that point in his career. You know, he had risen to a point of power where he would be a logical choice to take over, especially considering, you know, what they would go through during those years.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I did want to tell a little bit about what happened to the family after Paul Vario. Once Paul died, Little Al DiArco would take over the crew, and a meeting would be held in Canarsie. Al would meet with all the members one-on-one and put each individual's activity on record. So it was kind of a bit of a progress report in a way, where Paul would kind of move the reins over by dying, and Little Al would go and meet everybody. There is a fascinating story that I did want to share that would kind of related to the people Paul kind of grew up around and taught him how to be a mobster. And this is the kind of people that he was around. One of the individuals that was part of the crew still by the late 80s was a guy called Paolo Diana. It would actually be reported by Pete the Killer Abinante that he, quote, couldn't come because he was very old and he couldn't make it. So what Abinante does is gets Little Al and they go visit this individual. According to Little Al, who would flip years later, he would tell a story that they went and visited this individual and that he was 103 years old.
Holy shit.
And basically, this individual, Paolo Diana, kind of just came up and said, look, I'm at your service if you ever need anything. This was the legend of some of these old school guys in the Lucchese crime family. And these are the kind of guys like Corioli and like Diana that Paul Vario grew up around. And you can understand, you know, the kind of guy that he was. I mean, he was never going to crack. He was an old school gangster. Ultimately and sadly, the individuals that would take over the Lucchese family would really jam it up, including Little Al, who would cooperate, Anthony Queso, who would cooperate and just completely destroy the family, and Victor Amuso, who, you know, if we could say anything, Vic Amuso was probably the only somewhat level-headed group And if you actually know anything about the chart of the family, he's actually still listed as the present day boss. They've held a acting boss title for really ever. Now, if that's just, obviously that's just a kind of front boss sorts of things, but there's been a mess with the Lucchese's. They really were never the same. And we talked about this when we did the Tony Ducks episode. The problem that the Lucchese crime family had is they never had a capable leadership to pick the family up, because this was a long-standing success story. Tommy Lucchese was incredibly powerful. You know, Corallo was incredibly powerful and had a lot of sway. But once Corallo died, this family's been a complete mess. And like I said, I think the great white hope would have been Paul Vario, but unfortunately he passed away. You would agree, Blackjack, a total legend in the scheme of, and when I say legend, I get occasionally people on Reddit whining about, oh, they always talk about these guys as these great people. We're not saying they're great people. He is a legend in the scheme of gangsters.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think when you are considering the realm that we're discussing, he was one of the most successful people to do what he did. He assembled a crew that, as I said, I think there's very little argument that it was the most successful crew in terms of earning money that's ever been assembled. Paul Vario was a larger than life figure in the world of the American mafia. Does it mean he was a good guy? No, it just means he was really good at what he did.
I want to share a story about Paul Vario. Obviously he was a great earner, but he was also a very wild and wicked individual. We talked about obviously the sickening rape.
He was a hothead.
He very much was. And there was a story that was going around circles that one night Paul would take his second wife Phyllis out to dinner. They were sitting at a table when the maitre d' accidentally poured wine on the dress of Phyllis Vario. He then quickly tried to dry it with a dirty rag. Quote, an enraged Vario hit the maitre d' twice, and later that night would instruct his men to drive around Brooklyn to assault waiters after the restaurant had closed.
It, as if it's not bad enough that you hit the guy because he, you know, maybe he puts his hands on your wife and you don't love that and whatever. I'm not going to say I would assault a waiter over that, but that's bad enough. Then you just send guys out to just assault random waiters who had nothing to do with this. Crazy, yeah. It's crazy behavior.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, I think as we kind of end this episode, we always have to talk about the film Goodfellas, because that's where we know Paul Vario from. But one of the knocks that I have on the film, and I've always said this, it's a very good movie. It's one of the best gangster films ever made. My problem with it is the obsession they had with Henry Hill. I only wish they would have focused more on Jimmy Burke and Paul Vario, because they were the real people that we should have followed. We should have known more about these guys, you know, and that was one of the issues I had. And it's not like Nick Pileggi didn't know. Nick Pileggi knew very much about Paul Vario. I'd only wish they would have kind of involved him a little bit more. But
yeah,
you know, that I if I had a show to just talk about what movies do wrong with mob stuff, I would probably have a 2-hour show. So
yeah,
it's just how it goes. But there you go, Paul Vario on the sit down. A huge earner, a very powerful consigliere and capo, and an old school guy. If you're ever asked the question, who could have been great? He was already great, but Paul Vario would have been greater probably if not for dying, which doesn't evade any of us.
And Henry Hill.
Right. That stool pigeon. Correct. And as you said, lived a life as a degenerate. You're 100% right.
I mean, Henry Hill led a scumbag life after getting, you know, the second chance of all second chances. He led the life of a dirtbag. So,
yeah, he really did. Before we go, Blackjack, I do want to let everybody know that you can check us out on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. We're almost at 7,000 followers. So please follow the show page. You know, I know I say it every show, but I'm always completely fascinated with how popular the show has gotten. I'm almost I almost get emotional. I don't want to, but I almost do. I mean, I started this show because I love mob history. I love this stuff, and I never thought anyone would listen to it. I really didn't, but they do, and we have ads, and we get, and I know sometimes people don't like hearing the ads, but that's how we can do this show for free. You know, we want to keep this content free. And, you know, Blackjack, you have to admit you're pretty fascinated with the success that our show has had. It's truly been pretty awesome.
I'm very appreciative to everyone who listens and, you know, tunes in every week. And listen, we try to give you a good show every week and make sure it's something that's worth your time. And, you know, we appreciate you spending an hour or so of your week with us.
Yeah, I can't always get to every single person, but know that I see the messages, you know, people saying that they got their father on it or their cousin or someone older that lived through this stuff. And I mean, that's great. I mean, I know our demographics are a lot kind of more broad than other shows. I mean, yep. I know, and I'm sure we don't even hit most of the people that we'd love to hear listen to this. So, you know, if you know somebody you think might like the show, please tell them. Let them know how to access it and they can listen to it for themselves. I also want to please urge you, if you're on YouTube, check us out. You can search The Sit Down right on YouTube. I've actually started to really build that channel up as well. I'm up to almost 2,000 followers and I'm doing short videos on different gangsters. So make sure you check that out as well. And just continue to follow what we're doing. I mean, we're both doing a ton of content, but you know, this is a nice change of what we usually do.
Yep.
Make sure you check all that out. Blackjack, any final words? How was your holiday? I didn't even ask
you. It was fantastic, man. You know, it's always nice to get a little bit of a break, you know, at the end of the year and you know, look back on what you've done and what you want to accomplish in the new year. So, you know, it was nice to get a little bit of time off and we're here ready to go in 2022, man.
You know, Blackjack, we don't do this enough, but I want to give you a quick opportunity. I know a lot of people, you know, they don't know a ton about you, but let the people know what you do, like where they can find you, what you have going on.
Yeah, I run a company called betterthanvegas.com. We are a handicapping site, kind of an open source, like YouTube style platform. We have a lot of different programming that's available every week. It's all totally free. We give away free money multiple times a week. You know, we've got a lot of great stuff. So follow us on Twitter at BTVBets and check us out at betterthanvegas.com.
Yeah, hand in hand, gambling and the mafia always go.
They always work together, man.
Yeah, really do. All right, guys, that's that for the show. I know we, you know, sometimes we do hour shows a little longer, but I feel like if we can get the show done in 40, 45 minutes, that's the perfect sweet spot. So thanks for listening. Thanks for checking us out. As always, make sure you please give us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen. Give us a review. Let us know what you think of the show and what you might like to see. Next week, we'll have another great episode. We have so many more people to get to. We appreciate you listening. I am Jeff Nadeau. He is Blackjack Fletcher. See you next week here on The Sit Down.